You are listening to a podcast by Reverend Didi Arikakith from the United Methodist Wesley Foundation Campus Ministry in Tucson, Arizona.
Tonight we are just honored to have Dr. Anoop Chandola. Did I say this right? Oh, close enough. I'm going to invite you to come and have a seat in the center so everyone can see you. He has 40 years of teaching here at the university, and he started off teaching linguistics, and he got talked into teaching Hindu religion instead. So he spent many years here at the university, but in many different capacities. I thought I would start off by first kind of sharing with you, I have a couple slides here. Do you have any idea how many Methodists there are in the world? Anyone guess? There are 11 million United Methodists. Anyone guess how many Christians worldwide? What? A few billion, right on. It's 2 billion. Can anyone guess how many Hindus there are worldwide? 1 billion. There's 11 million United Methodists, and there's 1 billion Hindus. And I would venture to guess, a lot of us probably don't know a whole lot. So that's why all the more reason to have our honored guest with us today. So I'm going to turn it over to you.
And you'll be surprised when Didi talked about Methodists. How many Methodists are there? He has a Methodist too. Because I was educated from my childhood in a Methodist school, and I read the Bible as my first scripture before I read the Vedas and all things like the Bhagavad Gita or the Mahabharata or the Ramayana. Isn't that interesting? And my father went to the same school. All my brothers and sister went to the same Methodist school. So this is nothing new for me when we were talking about all these things, prayers, etc. That reminds me of my childhood and so on. And we sang in Hindi also, which is my mother tongue. Devi's mother is Malayalam, right? One thing about Malayalam is this, you can write it this way or this way, it is still the same word, Malayalam. You cannot do this with Hindi. That's my mother tongue. You know, I like your music very much, you know, and I am sad to know that somebody died. This is the basic question with us humans. What is death, dying? In other words, we are dealing, when we talk about religion, we are dealing with dukkha. Dukkha is suffering. And we are in search of ananda. I'm using the Sanskrit words. Dukkha is pain, and ananda is joy, pleasure. We are in search of pleasure. So one of the major philosophies, standard philosophies of India is Vedanta, where they wanted to deal with dukkha, with loss, with pain, with suffering. And Vedanta says there is really no real death because the self was never born. So how could it die? That is one of the major reasons why Vedanta became quite popular even with American intellectuals like Aldous Huxley, T.S. Eliot, or Joseph Campbell, or some other, you know, big guys, you know, men and women and so on. Because mainly we are looking for elimination of dukkha, of sadness. So when you talked about that young boy died, you know, I felt very sad, you know. It's the same thing with any religion, you know. It doesn't matter. We humans are really trying to tackle the basic question that really life sucks, you know, and so on. So that is what the Buddha, you know, dealt with, you know, without bringing in gods and goddesses or God. Buddha, you know, created an atheistic religion, and Mahavira, the founder of Jainism. So Indian religions are not necessarily theistic or monotheistic. The range is very big. You could start from atheism to theism to many gods, polytheism, many goddesses, to single God with capital G. So it is a big range, and you know, you fit in one of those things, you know, whatever your choices are. That is what the Bhagavad Gita said. And the Buddha also said, you know, the Bhagavad Gita said in Sanskrit, "E yathamam prapadante tas tathaiva bhajamyam." Whoever seek me in what way, I meet them that way. In other words, you decide the way. Somebody doesn't have the right to impose any way upon you. You have the brains, and you can think. You can decide the way. You know, and that is what the Buddha also said, that Atma Deepa Bhavata, Atma Charana Bhavata, be your own lamp. Take refuge in yourself, even though in Buddhism there is no self. Self means in you. You are the guide for you. Nobody can claim to be your guide. You have the freedom, the choice, you know. So, in other words, I am going to say that India developed a diversity for two reasons. Not only philosophical reasons, but because of historical reasons. So I am going to tell you a little bit about history. You cannot learn anything about Hinduism today. Let me guarantee that, okay? You do not learn about Hinduism in 15 minutes, because it's like the United States Congress. Every member in the United States Congress differs. If you do not differ, if you do not disagree, then you are not a Hindu. You are finished. You have to disagree. You have to differ. And you have to ask questions. You have to inquire, as Carl Sagan said when he was quoting from the Veda, Rig Veda, that Hindus were the first inquirers, scientific inquirers. You shouldn't stop. You should ask why, how, and so on. So I'm going to give you a little bit fast history in 5 minutes, okay? The recorded history is very difficult. The anthropologists, historians, linguists like me and so on, we have to conjecture, we have to guess. So let's go a little bit before, 3,000 years before Christ, the Indus Valley civilization, for example. They found underground civilization, and they had, for example, some terracotta figurines. One of the terracotta figurines looks like Shiva sitting in yoga posture, cross-legged posture. I'm sure you know how the Buddha sits in cross-legged meditation and so on. So maybe these were the foundations of yoga, who knows, you know. So the Indus Valley people might have given some sort of, you know, bath, for example, ritual bath. They have a big, huge pool and surrounded by some rooms. Maybe they took a dip, you know, like baptism, you know, and did some rituals and so on. So this is around a little before, 3,000 years before Christ. These people perhaps were Mesopotamians. Everybody knows Mesopotamia. These days everybody knows Iran. That's what it means, okay? So they came in the Indian subcontinent and introduced most probably their beliefs. But we have no clear idea what their faith or beliefs were, so on. Then we go next to the Dravidians. The Dravidians were definitely there a little before 2,500 years before Christ, and they were black people, dark-skinned people. And we do not know exactly where they came, you know. Of course, you know that we all came from Africa. The human origin is Africa, you know. So the Dravidians must have come from Africa. But how they arrived in the Indian subcontinent, we are not sure. Now let me talk a little bit about the Dravidians. The Dravidians were idolaters. But the most important thing about them is they had matrilineage. Matriarchy. You understand these terms? Where mother is the head. They had therefore developed an idea that mother, whom they addressed Uma, like Uma Sarma, she got that name. Yeah, her father is my counterpart at Columbia. And she got that name because of this. Uma. Uma is the mother head. Mother Uma or Shakti, the energy, the ultimate energy. She creates this cosmos at her will and sustains it at her will and dissolves it at her will. So this community, the Dravidians, the black people, they had this idea. Now this way, sociologically, you understand why we say Lord's Prayer and not Lady's Prayer, because the societies who developed Lord, they were not matrilineal, they were not matriarchal, they were male-oriented or male-dominated, or you can even say male-chauvinist, you know. We are facing that problem even today, you know. But the Dravidians didn't. They developed this idea, and then, of course, for procreation, Uma needed a consort, so they had their god Shiva, and ultimately they developed androgyny. Half female, half male. The left side, female with the breast, and the right side with Shiva, the male. This is called Ardhanarishwara, half male, half female, the ultimate. Isn't that a great idea, the gender equality? This is the only community known in history that had gender equality. The Dravidians, the black people. And then they also gave us yoga. Everybody knows these days about yoga. And the corollary of yoga is vegetarian diet. And because of economics and sociological structure, we developed our belief system. So they were plowing. They used cows and their children, the oxen, right? So they developed the notion of holy cow, because they are useful animals. Don't kill them, use them for other purposes. And that's how they became vegetarian. So yoga and vegetarian diet, they go together. You have a question, right? Why Indians developed vegetarian diet? Because of economics, because of sociological structures. You can see how our belief systems are created according to our social structure and our economic needs, and so on. So the Dravidians were very liberal in this respect. They achieved what we have failed even today. We have not achieved equal rights of women yet, no matter how we boast about our religious beliefs or this and that and so on. Okay? And then I'll go ahead. Before the Dravidians, I forgot to mention that there were ostriches, and they were there 3,000 years before Christ. And we do not have their recorded history, but their descendants are listed in India today as scheduled tribes. This is British pronunciation of scheduled tribes, you know. So they are protected, you know. But their ancestors, some of them believed that if you cut a tree like this, axe it, you know, then its spirit is absorbed by another tree. Do you know what idea I'm coming to? The idea of rebirth, reincarnation. So that is how the Indians got from this folk idea, which they centralized later in their philosophical systems. Even Buddha was impressed, even though he didn't believe in God, but he believed in samsara. You know, life goes on. There is no end to it, you know, and so on. So this was the optimistic picture given by the ostriches. Interesting, they were also black people. How they came in India? Of course they came from Africa, but how they arrived in India is still debatable, you know. Maybe they used that, you know, Burmese root, China, Tibet, Burmese root, because they brought ginger in India, you know. Ginger is their word. Everybody take ginger ale? So you are already converted to ostrich religion, okay? If you take ginger ale. Okay, then after the Dravidians, then came the white people we call Aryans in India. Everybody is familiar with the word Aryan? Aryan means the white people. They entered the subcontinent around 1500 BC, and their mother tongue was Sanskrit, you know. And they hated these black people. They thought that these black people are going to destroy their Aryan culture, white culture. So they asked their priest, the Brahmins. Everybody knows the word Brahmin? The priests, the Brahmins, the intellectuals, you know, okay? They asked that you collect all our white folklore or lore, whatever. And the result was that they came out with four books. The first book is called the Rig Veda. It is a humongous book. That is the oldest scripture of the world, not just of Hindus, but Rig Veda, R-I-G-V-E-D-A. Veda means video. that what you see, what you realize, is collected here in these books. So the Rig Veda is the first book, and it is in 10 volumes. The last volume is very interesting. What they did in the last volume, that they divided society in four classes. Everybody knows about caste system. This is the basis of caste system. That the first three classes, the Brahmins at the top, the priests, obviously they were you know, the authors of these things. So they put themselves on the top, you know. And then the rulers, they were afraid of rulers, you know. So the rulers, the warriors, they were the second class. And they agreed, yes, we are rulers, we are second class. Okay, fine. And the merchants, they were wealthiest, they were the third class. And the fourth class were the menial workers, who were the black people. The first three classes were white people. And that is how, unfortunately, you know, became the basis of so-called the caste system. One of you asked about caste system. So the first book, right in the last volume, establishes this racial system. You know, many times you are told that Americans started discrimination, racial discrimination. No, the Indians started. Okay? You are the last one, probably, you know. India is the first country where you have recorded racial discrimination and so on. So it's very interesting, you know. And since they were white people were not matriarchal, matrilineal, they hated these black people, you know. But gradually what happens, that when different ethnic groups meet, ultimately integration is the way. There is no other way. So they began to marry, you know, intermarry. You know, suppose you have a black mother and a white father and so on. So the black mother teaches the children her own customs, her own things, you know, like Uma. That Uma is the ultimate power, the ultimate creator. So the children get accustomed. They say, okay, Uma is okay. But the Aryan god was Indra, big male god, who was flirting around with women, beautiful women and so on and so on. And they liked it, you know. Male idea, you know, it's good to flirt around women, you know, and so on. So this is, you know, the Rig Veda structure. You have big male gods, Varuna, Indra, and so on and so on, whom we worship even today, you know, and so on. And then Uma and Shiva, we worship them today. So you get the idea how when ethnic groups meet, they begin to integrate their deities and so on, integration and so on. Okay? Did you get that? And they were also doing sacrifices, the Aryans. They sacrificed animals and so on. And later, around 500 BC, when the Buddha came, he didn't like this animal cruelty. He was opposed to his ancestral religion, the Vedic religion, the religion of the Vedas, the four Vedas and so on. So you understand why Buddha arose against his own ancestral religion. Like why Protestants came. When they didn't lie. Why Martin Luther, you know, became, you know, rebel? Why? Similarly, the Buddha became the Indian Martin Luther, you could say, you know. He rebelled against his ancestral religion, that you kill animals for food, that's not good. That is not compassion. When you talk of compassion, then you really mean it, you know, and so on. So Buddha became atheist too, and so on. So here, you know, is little short story of the Aryans. The only people I would add now are the Tibeto Burmans. They are on the border of the Indian subcontinent. You know, China, Tibet, Burma. Everybody knows Burma is now called Myanmar. And they were recipient, you know. They didn't create, but they liked all these things. And they received from other ethnic groups all these beliefs and spread them toward China, toward Southeast Asia, and so on. As you know, why Buddhism went to China, Japan, Sri Lanka, Southeast Asia, mainly because these people, Tibeto Burmans, were living on the borders and they had easy access to those areas. This is how you understand how Indian religions, you know, spread out of India. One of the, you know, things you must remember, if you forget, let me give you two words, dharma and karma. If you do not remember any words, remember these two Sanskrit words, dharma and karma. Dharma means religion, and karma, well, dharma means many things, but one of the meanings is religion. And karma was developed by the Vedic Aryans, the white people. They gave us the idea of karma. Karma is the verb kru, meaning to do. So what you do, what you act, if you have any action, there got to be, it's a reaction. So this action-reaction cycle, or you could say action-action-action-action, or action-reaction-action-reaction cycle, is called karma. They have this notion that if you do good things, you will have good life ahead. If you do bad things, if you watch too many Hollywood or Bollywood movies, that's bad karma. I'm just joking, you know. So on. Okay. So you got the idea of karma. It's very simple. Karma literally means action. So if you do some action, there will be some reaction of it and so on. And that is how we move ahead. Right now, we all are engaged in karma. Even if you are quiet, you are doing some action. And there is some change coming in you. There is some change coming in me. That is karma. Everything is karma. Anything, you know. Everything. Animate or inanimate things, you know. What is the interesting point of karma is that it doesn't need any god or goddess. It explains everything by itself. It doesn't need anything like God, you know. You know how God was created, you know, in Iran. The Parsis, the Zoroastrians, they gave us monotheism. They had Ahura Mazda, which was wise lord. And then the other part, who spoils things, is Ahriman, which is Satan. And then the Jews, who were under the Persian Empire around 500 BC, they liked this. And they included it in the Bible. It was not in the beginning in the Bible, right? Old Testament didn't have the notion of God. But because the Iranians were politically very powerful, influential, and the Jews were living there, they got the idea of God from the Parsis. The Parsis fled to India. God could not protect them when Islam took over Iran. It's very sad. But in India, Parsis, right, Didi? They flourished. The best people in India, the most prosperous people who were persecuted in their own country. Their God could not protect them. They were protected in India, you know. So India has not only so-called Hinduism, but you have old Parsi religion, Zoroastrian. Jews, when Jews were persecuted in the Middle East, they fled to India. And of course Christianity, we have the oldest Christianity in India. And recently when Tibetans were persecuted, they fled to India. Hundreds of thousands, right? Dalai Lama is still living in India. So as I told you that because of this ethnic background, lots of gods and goddesses were created. And you have to develop this attitude. Either you tell them that you are going to accept my god or my goddess. If you don't, then I will kill you, like you have in the Middle East, you know. That is what Middle East does, you know. No tolerance. So here in India you have lots of gods and goddesses because ethnic group brought gods and goddesses and so on. And they said, so what the heck? Do you have Guadalupe? Well, fine. Add Guadalupe also. Guadalupe becomes our goddess. No problem. No problem. So even if you didn't know about any god and goddesses and you want to add, Hindus would be very glad. Yes, add them in and so on. So people often say that how many gods and goddesses you... This is a basic question. In the Veda, Rig Veda, there are about 33 gods and goddesses, both, you know, male and female and so on. But later on, as the joke goes, that Hindus have 330 million gods and goddesses. I'm sure there are more. You cannot count them. But you can understand why we have, you know. Sometimes, you know, parsimony, for the sake of parsimony, you could say, well, let's reduce them to only three gods. One for creation, one for sustaining it, and one for destruction. Ultimately, the universe has to collapse. So, you need a god for destruction, right? So, creation is Vishnu, for example. and creation is Brahma, and sustenance is Vishnu, and destruction is Shiva. So sometimes you must have heard that Hindus also have a trinity, but it's not true. We have lots of gods and goddesses. But if you want to use the parsimony principle, three would be enough. Brahma for creation, and Vishnu for sustenance, and Shiva for destruction. And then there are other sects, you know, there are lots of sects, you know. I told you that the Dravidians were idolaters. The Aryans were not, the white people were not idolaters, but the Dravidians were. And later we had to make sort of compromise. Some Hindus, even today, do not use idols, icons. And some Hindus use icons and so on. And some Hindus do not believe in any gods, goddesses, any god. So I cannot really tell you how many gods and goddesses. That was your question, right? You cannot count, you know. My wife has written a book which is in press, and she added one of the latest goddesses from California. The Silicon Valley is dominated by Indians and Chinese, you know, and Japanese. You know, so Indians think that they have become rich because they worship goddess Lakshmi. Lakshmi is the goddess of wealth. So they call it Vaibhava Lakshmi, prosperity goddess, you know. So my wife has gotten a picture of the California goddess, and she has included this in her. It's coming by the end of this year. So you can see how we create, even in California, you know. So I cannot really give you any picture of gods and goddesses. So will you remember dharma and karma? Dharma is religion. If you forget about Indian religions, remember dharma and karma religions. Karma is action reaction. That is responsible for rebirth. Life goes on until you get salvation. How do you get salvation? By knowing yourself. This is one of the main ways, you know, that you have to know who you are. If you talk, oh, I know this and that goddess or god or god, you do not know even yourself. How can you talk about imaginary things? So that is the question. Know yourself and you will get salvation. That is the most important thing. Inquire, who am I? That is called the Vedanta. Any other thing?
Let us thank our